banho de lua. Fico branca como a neve. Seu luar é meu amigo. É tão bom sonhar contigo. Oh, lua tão grande tu.
Great singers. We are so good at this.
Raio de lua. I had no idea that song was so old.
I knew it was old because it sounds old.
It. Okay. All right. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm so like out of words this week. Like,
I know why you're out of words, but I'm not gonna comment on it. Carol just did her 23andMe and she found out that she is full-on colonizer.
That's not true.
Listen,
it's better than the truth. They're gonna believe it. No, it's not nothing to do with 23andMe. I'm not gonna give my genetic materials to any big corporations, okay? Yeah.
Oh my god, are you in that group? Are you guys in that you, Carol, and you listeners, are you in that Facebook group? It's called, like, My 23andMe Results Came Back, and it's just, like, making fun of white people. Let me add you, Carol. Hold on.
Yeah, you'd add me. If I do it, you guys will know about it, because I won't stop talking about it, because I have no idea what's possibly going to be in it. So
yeah the group is actually called When You Get Your 23andMe Results Back. So if you're in that group, I am also in that group. Come find me.
I was trying to, still trying to, like, yeah, it's nothing to do with that, guys. But anyways, this is Suspiria, a true genetic podcast. I'm Carol.
And I am Stephanie.
And today, we are already in shock, but we will be talking about a shocking case, kind of. I don't know. Yep. It's a case with nice turns, and it's unsolved. So, yeah, you guys have to pay attention to the details and try to come up with a nice explanation of what the fuck happened. We love those, right?
Yes, we do.
This outline was based on articles from Curta Botafogo, RSete, and the episode on Delante de Fé on our beloved Linha Direta, and Wikipedia for names, dates, and such, of course.
Which, by the way, guys, the other day I was watching, I don't fucking know what I was watching, but one of the recommended videos was Linha Direta, and it had English captions, so I'm guessing that some of the episodes are captioned, so if you ever want to see like a dramatized or a reenactment of it, it's on YouTube. Some of them have captions. I don't know exactly which, but
Linha Direta is really good to watch. Like, even though our episodes most of the time have more information than those episodes do, but they are, like, one of the most complete sources, except for us, like, video wise with, like, reenactments and stuff, and especially this episode. I really like it. Like, it's really well done. So, all right. So this case was, like, very famous and high profile when it actually happened, but the fame and, like, the repercussions of it kind of, like, died down a little bit. Like, the fever, you know, the everything died down after, like, a few years, you know? Yeah. So it's, like, not a lot of people know about it.
Yeah.
Even though it was, like, the biggest, most famous, like, case of when it happened.
Yeah, but I also think it's in part it's because, like, so much shit happened around the same time that, like, it got buried under a lot of other big cases.
Yeah. And dictatorship and stuff. This is, like, the dawn of the dictatorship. Like, right before it happens. Mm-hmm. Like, it happens and then, like, months later, the dictatorship hits.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. So, it's, like, I don't know. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I try to do some research about that specifically. Like, if it was a different time in history, maybe we would have like a different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some things that did happen on this that I do think it's in part because of the dictatorship, you know, because then the justice system gets kind of bananas.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about that when it happens and, you know, keep the speculations and stuff to the end, too. So it will just be all details. And there's a lot of details that we're going to be saying, and that you're going to be like, why are you talking about that, you know? But I don't know. It's important to have, like, a good notion of what the context is. And, you know, so you can fully understand everything, every single aspect of, you know, the lives of the people that are involved in this. So today we're talking about Dana de Tefé, who is not Brazilian. But, I mean, the case happened in Brazil. She is... I mean, anyways, so her name is Dana Edita Fischerova. She was born on former Czechoslovakia?
Czechoslovakia?
She's Czech. Czech.
It's like back when there wasn't Czech Republic and Slovakia, yeah, when like, it was
so,
all one.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she was born there on May 4th, 1921.
Oh my God, May the 4th be with you. Sorry, I had to.
Her family is very well-to-do, and she grew up going to the best schools. She was fluent in 6 languages, and she was also trained in classical ballet, all that. So, all the preppy stuff she was into. So, in 1939, when she is 18 years old, the Nazis come out of nowhere in this outline, because, I mean, you know, and they invade Czechoslovakia. And now her family is captured by Nazis and sent to concentration camps. She, however, joins the resistance.
Yes.
So, she's Jewish. Her whole family's Jewish. They're not as lucky as she is. So, she joins, you know, the resistance. And it's not clear exactly, like, you know, what she did and how involved she was, whatever. But she was able to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And she flees to Italy, where she starts working with actors. Odoardo Sparos troupe as a dancer, because she was trained in ballet, remember? That's a lot of information, like, for the first 2 minutes, right? Like, Nazis and ballet and fucking languages and Jewish. Anyways, well, get this. While on tour, she meets Ettore Muti, and they fall in love. That guy is, of course, a fascist politician, because this is Italy in the 40s, right?
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. So they moved to Rome, and in 1943, Ettore is killed by an anti-fascist group. Some versions of this say that he was killed right in front of her and she was arrested, but I couldn't really find much evidence about that. Like, everything says, like, well, he was killed on suspicious circumstances for the group for sure, but, like, not. There's no details. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Putting it out there, I don't know. Okay, question mark. You might have noticed a huge discrepancy in the story, but a big hole, because how can she be in love with a fascist when her whole family was killed by Nazis? Right? So the easy answer to that question is that she didn't really care. So this is not a negative comment on Dana by no means, but it's always said that she would be close to whatever she thought would bring her more monetary advantage. This is what journalist Carlos Torconi says. That guy, like, dedicated his whole life to covering this case. So I trust his opinion on her. Like, it's not the most positive, but, like, I feel like even a victim, they always have, like, a bad side to them. You know what I mean? Like, no one's 100% good. So this is not bad that she's, like, greedy, whatever, because she was already rich. You know, like, she grew up rich. She had the money from her family. But, you know, she always wanted to, like, you know, be close to the upper echelon of society, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's all right. So, that guy says that she wasn't really loyal to any particular side of any issue, but she was loyal to the money, 100%.
Hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, she couldn't obviously be loyal to the Nazis because she was Jewish, but yeah. I don't think that made much of a difference in Italy.
Yeah.
So flash forward to a year after the other one died in 1994. She is in Spain now, and she marries a dentist, Alberto Diaz de Lopes Diaz. He has two Diaz in his last name. He's the owner of the best clinic in Madrid, and in 1948 they divorced. However, and after that divorce, she moves to Mexico. Yeah, yay. Didn't expect that. Woohoo! And she marries journalist Carlos Zanegri, and she quickly divorces him also. So she's marrying like famous people, you know, more and more famous people. So yeah, about Donna, she is absolutely beautiful, but she has no apparent bananas, so she's like very sane.
So she's not very much like Carol. She's a little bit different. No.
So picture one of those old Hollywood actresses. This is what she looks like. For me, personally, she looks like Lucille Ball, if Lucille Ball was Jewish. But wait. It's not like... Yeah, Lucille Ball, she looks like, you know, she has like a funny face and she makes faces. But it's like, if you see a picture of Lucille Ball, like, you know, looking beautiful, basically, you know, just a blank face. She looks just like Donna.
I think, you know what?
Like, I can totally see it.
Because I hadn't seen that episode in like a while. Let me look her up.
Hang on, let me send you a picture. Let me send you a picture, okay? I have it, like, ready.
Can I tell you what I think she looks like?
Mm.
I think, even though I know she's not Brazilian whatsoever, I think she looks very Brazilian.
She could pass for anything.
Like, I think, if I saw, if someone was like, oh, this is my grandma from São Paulo, I'd be like, okay, cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, she could pass for, like, Mexican. She could pass for anything. Like, it's fucking crazy, man. Like, she is very fluid, like, I guess. Which I think contributes to her success in, like, every circle that she's in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right, so, I mean, when she's young, I think she looks like Lucille Ball, but, like...
You know what's funny? I Googled Dona de Fé, and there's a picture of Elisa Samudio.
Yeah,
and, like, the images.
I mean, the thing about this whole thing case is that, like, there's not much pictures information out there. It's like the same. It's like five websites.
Yeah,
like you have to like scour the internet because it's not popular. People kind of forgot about it, I guess. So you guys are welcome. You guys are knowing more about this than most Brazilians do now.
Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, So as I said, I think she looks like Lucille Ball when she's young, but when she's like older, she kind of looks like one of the royal sisters. So like either Queen Elizabeth or her sister, Princess Margaret. Is it Margaret?
I think the name? It's Margaret.
Margaret, yeah. You know what I mean? So. Like she kind of looks like that. Like she has like that expensive look to her. You know what I mean? Like she could be one of a member of the family, I think. Just the look, just so you have a visual, okay? So she is not only just beautiful, she is very smart. Like, very, very smart. So now, by this point, it's fair to mention that there's a lot of speculation. And what I at least see is rumors that she was a spy. Yeah, she reportedly worked for Germans, Russians, the British, and Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I couldn't find any evidence for that. So I'm like way too skeptical about this. I don't know. I feel like it could possibly be true, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. So in 1951, though, she makes her way to Brazil, where she meets none other than Manuel de Tefé. So this is when she gets the last name Tefé. So they met at a gala in Rio, and it's said that by this point of the story, she's already filthy rich, and I believe it. Like, it's not, at least by that time, Brazil, like, in the 50s, I mean, you could not, like, frequent, like, those circles in the upper, like, rich, you know, class in Rio if you were not, like, already at least passing as really rich. So, yeah I believe it. So, Manuel was a diplomat. And a race car driver. So that's a fun guy, right? Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. He was really good at the sport. He would like compete in many countries and always first place. So it wasn't like a hobby or anything. He was a professional at it. So that's really cool. And as a diplomat, however, he would even like he would be transferred to tons of countries, but he would even go as far as serve as the actual ambassador of Brazil in Honduras. So he is a big deal. So now if you're a listener and somehow you know a little about Brazilian history, that name sounds very familiar to you. That's because he was the actual grandson of Barão de Tefé. So that guy was, you know, very honored, high, echelon, like, war hero or whatever. And I think he fought on, like, I think what was the only war that we fought as a country? Mm-hmm. Brazil, that was the Paraguay War. I'm sorry, people from Paraguay, but, yeah, we fought for, like, I think it was territory, right?
Dude.
I have no idea. So, also, I want to thank Wikipedia for keeping that fantastic lady out of everything about the Tefés, basically. So, the Tefé name is also very famous because of the Baron's daughter, Nair Tefé, von Hoholt. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a honk. Which she's considered to be the effing first female caricaturist. So the person makes caricatures? How do you say it? My English is so bad, guys. I'm sorry.
I know the word in Portuguese, but like, basically she was a cartoonist that did
a female cartoonist. Yeah.
Yeah, but like
she was the first of the whole world.
Yeah.
In like the 20s. And she was also like a first lady. So it's a big deal, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, I could go on and on about Tefés, really. And it's a huge family that is filled with winners. Like, everyone's a big deal. It's crazy. There's, like, there's, like, a list of all the famous Tefés. It's, like, so many. And everyone's, like, very prestigious. And everyone's, like, closely related to Manuel. So it's not like we're talking about, like, this long-distance cousins that you hear about. No, it's everybody's, like, you know, tiny circle. So I'll spare you guys of all the details, however. But I thought that you, Steph, would appreciate this bit of information. But Manuel's dad, Oscar de Tefé, built a Scottish-style castle in Petrópolis. My grandfather's from Petrópolis, I think. Really? And named it after Manuel. Oh. That castle will be used as a set for many movies and novellas, including Kings of the Infernos.
Yay!
Everything is connected, as I told you. I keep telling you, everything is connected, yes.
If you don't remember Kings of the Infernos, go back to, I don't know, about that. I love you,
Kings of the Infernos. I don't know which episode it was.
I don't know. It was like a while ago.
I know you were talking about Global Play because I know that we talk about Global Play in every episode.
Yes.
And I hate Global Play. Anyway.
I hate the fact that they're not on Amazon Fire Stick.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
So all of that is to say that Dana chose a really good family to marry into. Just saying. They are the shit in Rio. Very, very rich and all that. Oh, and by the way, the castle is now for sale if anyone wants to buy it.
If anyone wants to buy it and let me live
Scottish
there.
Castle in Rio, it's available.
Let me live there for free.
Mm-hmm.
So we apologize for deviating too much from the point here, but the story just keeps getting better and better. Mm-hmm. So Oscar, Manuel's dad, was also a diplomat, right? He was assigned to many European countries, including Austria and Italy. So while Manuel was in Europe, that is where he kind of got into racing and all of that. He was doing really well, all first places. In 1928, he went to a big car convention in Rome, and there he met a little Italian lady, the socialite, rich, noble, beautiful Wanda Barbine. Don't know how to pronounce that in
Wanda Barbini.
Yeah. They had an affair, and out of that came a son, Antonio Luiz Tefé. They never got married, and Antonio stayed in Italy. Years later, he would become famous under the name of Anthony Stefan. So he became a famous actor for spaghetti western movies, and it is exactly what it sounds like. So, like, spaghetti so many western famous people connected to this whole story.
Hang on. You're not even to the craziest connection yet. Hang on.
So, why are we talking about this? Well, after the whole thing with Manuel was over, Wanda would eventually, in the late 30s, become the wife of a fascist politician, you got it, Ettore Muti. They would divorce like a year before he married our Donna. What?
The I fuck? Know, right?
Wait. So imagine the talk between Donna and Manuel. Like, well, we both have been married before, and we wonder who our exes are. Like, what are the odds?
What? Yeah, you know what's craziest about this? No one makes the connection. Like, no articles make that connection. I think we're the first people making it. Nolly and Geretta doesn't make that connection. We don't, like, what?
Can you play the Plantão da Globo song so we can pretend that this is, like, breaking news? Breaking news, we made the connection. But, like, mm-hmm. What are the odds of this ever? This is literally my biggest nightmare.
Steph, there's the thing. It's too big of a coincidence.
This is my biggest nightmare.
This I used to, like, before I found that little detail, I used to, like, have a hard time thinking, like, believing that she was a spy.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, what are the chances that she goes to Rio and like, happens to me? Like, it's, I'm sorry. I don't know.
That is very true. So, Manuel and Donna got married 6 months after they met in 1951. Oh, my grandparents got married in 1951. Or was it 52? Whatever. The ceremony was held in Mexico, where Manuel had been assigned to work at the embassy. In 1953, he was promoted and transferred to Uruguay, where they lived until 1956. Then he was transferred to Canada, and after that, the couple moved back to Brazil in 1958. They now lived at the Copacabana. Is it the Copacabana Palace?
No, Copacabana Palace is just a hotel.
But there's people that live there, like Narcisa.
Narcisa lives there?
I'm pretty sure she lives there.
Oh, that's another connection. I didn't even put it there, but... I'm sorry. No, Manuel dated Narcisa's, like, mom before
what?
She... Yeah, everything is... I mean...
I'm pretty sure she lives... She either lives there or, like, she hangs out there way too often.
Also, guys, just so you guys are not lost, Narcisa is, like, a socialite from Rio. So... I mean, she's I don't doubt that she lives there, but... Dude, she's hilarious.
So they made a Brazilian version of the Real Housewives, which is called Mulheres Ricas, which is like one of the best ratchet shows. I'm gonna rewatch it, dude, just to myself and see if she actually lives there. I'm pretty sure she either lives there or she's like there like 24/7. So Manuel and Donna got divorced in 1960, so didn't last very long.
This is, however, when the story actually starts. But we here at Suspiria have the journalistic duty to give you all the context, the background, blah, 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 blah. So, now we know who the players on the story are, especially in the case, like, Donna were, spoiler alert, as we already said, there's no conclusion. So, you kind of need to know a little about everyone. So, Donna is now living on her own 10th floor apartment of the Marcilia building. And that is on the beach of Botafogo, Rio. So Botafogo is, you know, like when you think of Rio and you see like the mountains and the beach and the, like that is on one side of the bay. Botafogo is like on the side that like has a view to that. And her apartment has a view to the whole thing. So it's probably a very expensive place. And I mean, I had the privilege to already have like that whole view, like the complete, like, you know, sea with the mountains and everything, like, and it's like breathtaking. It's a lot. So
I've never been there, so
yeah, no, it's beautiful. So when she was still married to Manuel Chitefet, she met Leopoldo Heitor de Andrade Mendes, who worked for the law offices of Oscar Stevenson. And we say that because he's American, British, I don't know. His name is Oscar Stevenson. So they are the lawyers of the Tefet family, and Leopoldo Heitor is Donna's lawyer. So they become really good friends, and there are rumors out there that they were involved romantically, and that, I mean, you can choose what you want to believe it or not, but, I mean, Leopoldo Heitor himself says that they were just friends. She was an older lady by that point. She was still beautiful, but he says that it would have been an honor to have been her lover, but it never happened between them. I don't think it's relevant to the story if they were lovers or not. I really don't think it did either, because, I mean, we kind of established that Dana, she has to win something out of the relationship, I think.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't win anything out of Leopoldo.
True.
So he was trying to fix her up with a job with Olivetti, a company that manufactures computers, typewriters, fax machines, calculators, etc. So let's stop for a second and talk about Leopoldo. So by this point, he was already a famous lawyer, famous in quotation marks. He became known as the devil's advocate, which a Brazilian translation is literally the devil's lawyer, you know? After he represented the defendants on a very publicized trial for the crime known as the crime of Sacopa. We will likely cover that case in the future, so we won't be telling you that many details about it, but what you need to know is that the public was not in love with Leopoldo Heitor. They hated him. Like, a lot. Yeah. Leopoldo was, like, as publicized and had, like, about as much newspaper space as the actual criminals on that case. Like, he became a figure because of that. Even before Sacopa, though, he had already been accused of embezzlement and larceny and had actually fled to Argentina until the charges were dropped, basically. So, sketchy guy, yeah. Regardless, Dana still trusted him to represent her and to deal with all her stuff. Yeah. So, people would even talk to her about it. Like, are you sure you want that guy around your stuff like that? And she would always defend him, saying that he was a good man after all. So, I don't think Dana would really involve herself with a man of that reputation.
Yeah.
Especially because, I mean, he didn't look good. You know, not to shame anyone on their looks, but I mean, I think that for Dana to be involved with someone that didn't really give her anything, it would have been like for aesthetic reasons. That guy, he's not even like charming, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he was pretty ugly.
Yeah. So, it's June 29th of 1961. Dana is at home with a friend, Maliza, packing her bags for a trip. She would drive to São Paulo with Leopoldo, stay there for a few days, and then she would go to Rome. Because Olivetti is a Italian company, and she was going to be dealing with all that potential job offer in São Paulo all throughout the trip. So they leave the apartment, drop Maliza off at her place, and leave bound to São Paulo. Fast forward to the next day, Verinha, Leopoldo's wife, calls her brother, who is a dentist, urging him to come to the apartment right away. When he gets there, he finds Leopoldo in bed, bleeding from an apparent gunshot wound to the leg. He takes him to the hospital, where the bullet is removed, and get this, Verinha actually asks for the doctor to keep the bullet.
Oh.
Again, this is something that I would do.
Ew.
Yeah, I would. You've been shot. Why wouldn't you keep the bullet? You know?
No thanks.
Yeah, I mean, if you survive, like, it'd be one thing if, you know, yeah, this is the bullet that killed my husband. But no, like, he's fine. So he didn't check in the hospital with his actual name. I mean, it was, like, two names that he has on his name, but he didn't use. You know what I mean? So, a few days later, he goes back to Dana's apartment. Maliza is there because there's, like, some construction work going on, whatever. And that's when Leopoldo gives the first version of events that transpired on the night before, the previous night. He would change the narrative dramatically, at least, to other times. Of course, when Maliza sees him, she's kind of alarmed because he's supposed to be in São Paulo. But he's also, like, walking with a cane. So, like, what the fuck? You didn't have that cane yesterday. Like, what's happening? So, he says that his, like, injuries were due to a prank someone had pulled on him. And after, like, a DIY bomb was detonated and shrapnel hit him on the leg.
Sure.
Should I finish this? I don't know. I've just been reading for, like, a long time. I don't know. Oh, okay. Anyways, so when asked about Dana, he pulls a "you won't believe this actually happened" deal and says this. He left Marisa at her place at around 8, which was true, and drove to São Paulo, getting there in the early morning hours. On that day, they went to a cafe to eat or drink or whatever, and they were sitting down, minding their own business, when they were approached by a foreign-looking man. He starts talking to Dana, and she's visibly shaken. She tells Leopoldo that the man told her that her mother, you know, the one that was sent to the concentration camps earlier, was actually alive in a nursing home in Prague. Of course, Dana gets up, leaves right away, goes to Prague to meet her mom. Marisa was like, yeah, the fuck that happened. Yeah, right. You know, what? So Leopoldo tells her that Dana needs money. And she asked him to sell the real estate she had in São Paulo and some of her jewelry. She hands Marisa a letter, quote unquote, handwritten by Dana, detailing all of that. The money would be used to get her mother out of the asylum, supposedly. A few days later, he presents Marisa with another letter from Dana, asking for more money. Of course, Marisa is skeptical as fuck.
Yeah, because this is, like, even my 2-year-old nephew could come up with a better corrupt story. And he doesn't even know how to form full sentences yet, so there's that. What happens next is that Leopoldo, his wife Verinha, and their 2 sons move into Dana's apartment. Dana had given him power of attorney, and therefore, he sold the apartment, like, 2 months later, and kept all of the money. He was selling most of the things that Dana owned. That's when Leopoldo's boss, Oscar Stevenson, starts smelling the fish and decides to call the police. Mm-hmm. He was a criminal lawyer, so he basically hands in the case to the police with everything that he knows at that point. Good. Good, boss.
Yeah.
Investigations start, and they can't find any evidence that Dana ever left the country. In fact, she didn't even have her passport on her, so how the fuck was she supposed to leave the country? Like, get on a freaking one of those kegs of beer and just, like, sit in there and say, oh, put the lid on. Let me get out of the country. No.
Yeah.
It was also determined that the job offer Dana had gotten was completely false. 10 months after Dana's disappearance, Leopoldo is out with his son buying some newspapers when he's approached by 6 men, pushed into a van, to like a VW van, which in Brazil we call combi, and they drive off. That was the police illegally arresting him, because this is a dictatorship, so they don't need fucking warrants.
No, it's not a dictatorship yet, but it's almost unethical for sure. Yeah,
it's almost there. He was taken to a shack at a nearby beach and interrogated. Meanwhile, Verinha is at the police station saying that he had been kidnapped. Get this. She was wearing Donna's fucking jewelry.
At least a little suspicious. Just a little.
Yes. So, it is in that sketchy little shack that Leopoldo gives the second version of events. He says that they dropped Marisa at her place at around 8, which was true, and drove to São Paulo. At around 10, they had some car trouble and stopped by the side of the road. That is when they are approached by a man, and he pulls out a gun. He threatens to shoot if they don't give him their money, etc. Leopoldo has a gun too, though. And they start shooting at each other, you know, like Wild West style, like
Macarronada Western. You have the spaghetti Western in Italy, Macarronada Western in Brazil. Yes.
Leopoldo gets shot on the leg, but the man soon runs away. Dana, though, had been shot too on the head. He starts driving to a nearby town to take her to the hospital, but not far into the drive, he notices that she's already dead. So, naturally, he turns the car around and heads back to Rio, because that's what you would do.
Of course.
He starts realizing, though, that driving around with a dead body on the car doesn't really make him look innocent. Oh, you don't say. And since he had been dragged through the mud with the Sacopan case, he knew that he would automatically be assumed guilty. Remember, no one fucking likes him. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he contacts a friend and tells him to bury Donna. He never says who that friend was and claims that he doesn't know where Donna is. He is then obviously arrested for murder. But this is like his cover-up stories, like for someone who went to law school. I'm not even gonna finish my sentence.
What I love about these stories is that they're not even like remotely alike. Like they all start the same, which is probably the only true part of it. But then it's like, you know. Anyways, the investigators are still trying to piece the story together, though, because they don't have a body and Leopold is just lying through his teeth. It's said a lot that on that time, in Brazil specifically, especially, if there's no body, there's no crime. Like, they're still stuck on that, like, you know, which is not necessarily true. Like, you can't have a murder if you don't have a body. You know what I mean? Like, it helps a lot on the investigation, but, like, you know, but this is the time before DNA evidence, before a lot of stuff. So they kind of had to have a body to prove that it was a murder. So they interview Francisco da Silva, a.k.a. Chico, who worked at the rural property owned by Leopold. It was kind of like a farm, I don't know, farmhouse type thing. He said that on the night Donna disappeared, he had heard gunshots coming from Leopoldo's property. On the next day, Leopoldo approached him, saying that he had a job for him, that he had to bury a body at the cemetery of a local church. And he did. He took the police to the gravesite, where they unearthed a corpse. Ugh. So forensics will reveal that it couldn't really be Donna, though, because the body had been of a black woman.
So there's a second victim. Ooh.
Yeah, let's put a pin on that. I don't know, because if they don't have, like, DNA, it's, like, basically, I mean, what I suspect, like, you know, measuring the...
The bones?
Yeah, measuring the bones, and that's, like, Nazi science, I think. Right? So, I don't know how reliable that is. Like, it could have been Donna, but the forensics didn't help on that case. So, anyways, it was determined that it wasn't Donna. That's the thing. So, Leopoldo says, because it was, like, just bones, so it's not like they saw, like, the black skin on them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Leopoldo said that Chico was a crazy person. And when the police went to him to check that, though, they couldn't find him. He was never seen again.
Dun, yikes. Dun, dun. Yes.
Yeah. So, as it is with most of our other cases, this one of it was extremely publicized. On one side, you have the beautiful rich socialite who just vanished. And on the other, you have an evil lawyer that everyone already hates. So the media goes absolutely insane. And fair to point too, Donna was already famous before this case happened.
Yeah.
She had been like the cover of magazines. Like her and her husband were like on every social like column. They were written about heavily. Like they were famous already.
Yeah.
So it's like this famous woman just misses. It's missing and whatever. So I think Donna, if she was alive today, she would have been like an influencer or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So the result of that media frenzy is that people take it onto themselves to search for Donna. They dig and they dig, and bones, and any bones that they find is probably Donna. So the police gets many bones from the public. And a lot of them, it's like bodies, yeah, but a lot of them is, you know, just any like animal bone they find is suddenly Donna Stefé. Which is just interesting, right? It's like archaeology for dummies, you know, you're just searching for it. It could be on your backyard, who knows, you know, it might as well, it becomes like this like mythical search for, you know, the pot of gold. Some, it's crazy, man.
Yes. So while deposing to the judge, Leopoldo gives his third version of events. Now let's see if this is going to be a more creative one or if it's just going to be the same load of bullshit.
Well,
he says that they dropped Maliza at her place at around 8, which was true, and drove to São Paulo. Consistent so far.
Mm-hmm.
At around 10, he noticed that there's someone following them. They were ambushed by some foreign blonde people in uniform who took Donna. He shot at them, and they shot back, and that's how he got the bullet on the leg. Oh, what a hero. He says that it must have been either the Nazis or the Czech communists. Leopoldo goes back to Rio, tells everything to his boss, Oscar Stevenson, and he tells him it is probably best if he keeps his mouth shut. Sure, Jan. Mm-hmm. Donna calls him a few days later, telling him to keep himself out of this, but he decides to investigate anyway. Again, superhero. He finds out that she's in Prague with a fake passport, going by the name of Ludmila Fischer. Leopoldo... I was about to say this. What? Anyway, Leopoldo manages to escape the jail, and while on the run, he's convicted and sentenced to 37 years in prison. According to the state, he killed Donna to steal her possessions and shot himself in the leg on accident. The decision was given by Judge Ulises Salgado. No jury or anything. Mm-hmm. He was recaptured in August of 63 on the border of Brazil and Uruguay. He appealed and eventually got a retrial a year later. This time, the verdict would be decided by a jury.
A year later, 64.
Yeah.
Dictatorship. Prime time to be into the system.
Yes.
Prime time. Yeah. Gonna have tons of rights. All right. So, yeah, it's absurd what happens to him. Like, I'm not for that guy, but, like, there's a lot of injustices on this. So, this is when the police get a tip that Donna had been buried at the pig street at Leopoldo's rural property. So, that's where the pigs go, you know? Mm-hmm. So, she'd been buried under the pigs, basically. The police digs up a right hand out of the pig street. And its nails are still painted red. However, at that time, it was still impossible to prove that it was Donna's hand. But Donna was always wearing red nail polish. Just saying.
Yikes.
I have strong feelings that it was Donna, the hand, that it was hers.
Yikes.
So, his day in court finally comes along, and 4 years after the disappearance. He actually represents himself. The thing is, there's no evidence that he killed Donna. With no body, realistically, they would need at least a witness to secure a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. And also, they chose to do the trial on the city that Leopoldo had the property on. Mm-hmm. So everyone knew him. Everyone in the jury knew him. So he's there convincing his friends that, like, I mean, you can't prove that I did this. Like, you know me, kind of thing. You know, so the jury gives out a verdict of not guilty based on the fact that there is a reasonable doubt. There's no body. It's all stories. Like, they have a bunch of people from the jury panel on Linha Direta, and they're explaining, like, I just couldn't do a guilty because it wasn't completely sure. Like, one of them says, like, I'd rather have a killer out in the world than an innocent man in prison. Which, these are, like, really simple people, you know?
Yeah.
So it's cool that, you know, they're able to, you know, get out of the whole, like, this is a huge trial mentality and, like, put themselves in a place, you know, yeah, that they can have the kind of fair verdict. The thing is, the judge doesn't really accept that verdict, and he asks for the annulment of the verdict. That was done on the grounds that somehow the press got access, got into the room with the jury when they were talking or whatever, with no authorization by the judge or anything. So the verdict could not be solid. They could not use the verdict. Which is a fair argument, but I mean, I don't know how they got into, like, the picture that they talk about this on the internet, and they show the picture of the police, like, not the police, but the press, like, outside of the building with their cameras inside taking pictures. You know, like, with their arms. Like, I don't think that's enough to annul something like that, you know?
But it is.
It's, like, a legal argument.
This is, like, during the dictatorship, so, like, whatever bullshit they wanted to make as an argument, as a legal argument, they could just do it because they like held all the power.
Yeah. So they try him again. And he gets another not guilty verdict. And then they try him once again. And then he gets a not guilty again. Three times. So that last one was in 1971 when he's finally released after 9 years in prison. Given that a jury panel, jury of his peers, said three times, not one, not two, three times that he was not guilty.
Now, does Brazil have, well, that's more of any lawyers, any Brazilian lawyers listening, does Brazil have a double jeopardy law where if you're acquitted once, you can't be tried again? Obviously not back then, but I wonder if they have that now.
I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if it's something.
They probably do. But yeah, I mean, it's just so like, how can you keep someone in an innocent person, a not guilty, not innocent, but like a not guilty person in jail for nine years, right?
That's what happens when you live in a dictatorship.
Yeah. So Leopoldo's life went back to normal. I mean, as it can be, right? He divorced Verinha, got married two other times and had 10 kids. He just went back to, like, practicing law after being in jail. And he died of a heart attack in 2001. To this day, Donna's body hasn't been found. And this case will probably never be solved. They'll probably never find her. And even if they do, there's no way to prove that anything is her. So, yeah. This is one of those things that we'll probably never know the end of.
Exactly. And I had, like, a comment to make, because while we were doing this, I'm like researching more stuff on the case, and Carol probably read this, but Leopoldo's son was actually stabbed by a woman, a girl actually, in 1977 after he tried to rape her. And Leopoldo tried for years to get her convicted, but she wasn't, because it was self-defense. But, like, how crazy is that? Like, how many people around this guy are just, like, bad news? Oh, and he was stabbed to death, by the way. The son was stabbed to death.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I think, I don't know, it's... it's tough to assume that just because he was a sketchy guy that he did something to Donna, you know?
Yeah.
But there are a few details that, like, I don't know. This could be either really simple that he did, like, that's a narrative, right? I think the most logical, like, Occam's razor probability for this case is he presented her with a fake job opportunity to lure her to São Paulo to get her in a car with him.
Yeah. Right?
And they drive to São Paulo. They drop Maliza's at her place at 8. At 10, something happens. Around, because that it's a repeated thing. At around 10, something happens. Right? So at around 10, he gets to his rural property.
Yeah.
And now gets her out of the car and kills her. He either shoots himself on the leg on purpose to have, like, a nice cover story, you know? Like, I've been robbed, I've been whatever, but he doesn't really think about that.
Yeah.
Because he's too stressed out, like, you know, dealing with the body, and he's tired after that. So it's like, I don't know, it's either that simple, you know, and Chico did help bury the body, you know, and because they found, like, a black woman's bones inside of the place where supposedly she was buried, you know? But that had been, like, months after Donna, you know? So it could be that Donna was buried at the gravesite, but when he saw that the police was getting closer to Chico, he could have moved the body to, like, a different place and switched out or something. You know, it's possible. Like, it's all that. So it's either that simple explanation or Donna is a fucking spy and something happened
and she Leopoldo disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, not that.
Not disappeared, like someone like did something to her, but, like, she decided to disappear.
Yeah, I mean, the Tefes, they were really political people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were really, like, close to politics. You know, like, Manuel had been married one other time, and his marriage, like, his ceremony had, like, three presidents in attendance. You know what I mean? Getúlio Vargas was at his marriage. So it's like, it's his wedding. So it's not like this is just anyone. You know, she marries one of the most known, one of the most powerful, like, diplomatic figures of Brazil at that time. And I don't know, she could have been a spy for I don't know who. Like, I know that right before the dictatorship, there was tons of, like, you know, that kind of, like, intelligence work done in Brazil.
Yeah.
And this is proven. There, like, tons of, the United States had spies, the communists had spies in Brazil. It was, like, kind of disputed. And this is one, like, one of the reasons why the coup was installed, the military coup. Because to avoid that Brazil becomes a communist dictatorship, because they knew that a lot of the communist countries, because it's, like, the Cold War, all that, they had eyes in Brazil, you know, and they had spies in there, but I mean, it wasn't a real threat that Brazil was going to become a communist country. Like, it was never that advanced, but
yeah,
it's possible that she was meddling with someone, with some other forces, you know, because it's too much of a coincidence that she goes to Brazil and marries that guy specifically.
Right? That's why I'm like,
Yeah, and then it's like, she is married to that guy in tons of different, because she was barely in Brazil when they were married, right?
Yeah.
She had a vision into, like, different countries' diplomatic relationships with Brazil for years. So that's valuable. It's a valuable position to have, right? So it's, I don't know, I feel like it's too much of a coincidence for it to be, you know, so they separate. Either mandated by someone or they separate, you know. And she disappears like that.
And it's like, it's like everything sort of falls into place to what is the word that I'm looking for? It's just too, like, it's always like at the right time, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just too, I don't want to say perfect, but, like, I can't think of another word.
Could be someone trying to get her out of Brazil before the dictatorship comes along.
Exactly, because it wouldn't be good for her, especially because, like, there were already rumors that she was a spy. They wouldn't be...
Yeah, but I don't know if those rumors, like, came along after she disappeared or not.
I don't know. I feel like people, especially someone that was such, like, high profile as her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. And also the thing that kind of nails all this is the job offer with Olivetti, right? It's fake. It was not real. But what if Dana knew it wasn't real? What if Dana knew and it was like, well, what if she just told people that that's why she was going to São Paulo, right? And that's why she was getting in a car with the Politor. And, like, he, you know, I don't know, she just left it all to him anyways. And, like, there's no, you know, it's like, well, if you help me disappear, you're just going to keep everything. Like, that's possible. The whole passport thing, like, that she didn't leave her passport, that's also a detail that kind of, like, I lost sleep over this. Okay, she was supposed to go to Rome after going to São Paulo, right?
Yeah,
but she left her passport in Rio.
Yeah, so she could have gotten, like, a new identity.
Yeah, she could have gotten a new identity. Like, you know, she knew she wasn't gonna need it, so why would she take her passport with her?
Exactly. That is very true.
Yeah. Because it's a fact that the passport wasn't with her, because the passport was with, like, the crime, like, the files, the investigation. He was with the investigators, the passport.
Yeah.
So it's like she couldn't have left the country with it. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's a lot of like loose details that someone might have like designed this whole case and designed like the whole narrative of it. So there's distractions from what actually happened, you know?
Yeah.
And I think having Leopoldo y Thor out of everyone possible in her life disappear with her, not disappear with her, but like, you know, be the last person who sees it, is a major distraction.
Yeah.
You know, because if it was just anyone, it's like, well, yeah, it's just the last guy who saw her. But, you know, this gets publicized like, oh, yeah, the devil's advocate, less one to see, social life, blah, 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 blah. You know, it creates a whole layer of distraction onto this. I definitely think something is fishy onto this whole narrative and story. And it's very secretive that we can't know. And we'll never know. I don't know. What if she's, like, alive somewhere? I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe we would know once he died. But, like, he's been dead for, like, almost 20 years, so...
Yeah, I mean, it said that the truth died with him.
Yeah.
And it's true. I think it is.
That's crazy.
Yeah. One thing, though, that I don't know. It confuses me is the shot in the leg. Why was he shot in the leg? You know?
Maybe for, like, the cover-up story, but, like, at the same time, like...
Mm-hmm. I wish that were, like, ballistics or something done, like, to determine if the shot was, like, close range, or, like, was it someone else shooting at him, or him shooting himself on the leg, you know?
Honestly, judging by the whole investigation that was done in this whole case, I don't think they, like, cared enough to do tests like that.
I mean, they couldn't do tests like this because, by the time that they got to Leopoldo y Thor, it had already been like
forever,
in months. A day. Yeah, so it's like you already, the bullet was already out. But Verinha had the fucking bullet. They could have looked at it and see if it is like, I don't know. I don't know how it works, but there must have been a way to determine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it could be like, all right, so now we'll shoot you in the leg and you will go away now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I couldn't find information as to, like, you know, was it his gun, the, you know, was he shot by a gun similar to his, or was it, like, you know, he had a pistol and he was shot by a rifle or something like that. There was no information as to that, which is what sucks about covering a case that's so old, is that a lot of these details get lost, and I'm like, it's the truth is in the details. Why are you hiding them from me?
It sucks because, like, a lot of, like, questions that could be very easily answered with, like, today's technology or even, like, the 90s technology aren't answered because this is, like, 100 years ago, almost. Well, not 100, but, like, you know, like, a long time ago.
Yeah, 50 years ago.
Well, but in Brazilian years, that's 100 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was talking to you about. In Brazilian years, that's like 200 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. How was your week, Steph?
My week? Guys, let me tell you, in my next life, I do not want to have a uterus. I don't, like, I'm done with this uterus. Uteranian life
existence. Yeah,
I'm done with this, and that's all I'm gonna say about my week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was, yeah, exactly. How was your week, Carol?
Eh, all right, nothing special.
Nothing special.
No, not really. I mean, Steph knows I've been trying to eat healthier, and
she's been eating soup, which is not a real meal. I told her, "Oh, you guys, pretty soon,
Hang on. I'm actually really proud of my soups. Okay, so pause on that. I'm making soup as we speak. This episode might sound a little different because I am talking from my kitchen. This is a live kitchen episode. I have stuff on the stove over there. But yeah, I mean, soups are good. Soups are delicious. And my soups Sorry, my soups are very complete, nutrition-wise. So
soups are not real meals, so there is that. And pretty soon, like, not pretty soon, in a while, you guys might have a Suspiria episode in which Kara and I are in the same room.
Can you believe?
Da, da, da. Yes. And I'm not going to be eating any soup. If you give me soup, I'm going to throw it in your face, Carol.
That's not nice.
No soup.
Okay. I'll just give you, like, the vegetables on, like, their form, like, vegetable form instead of smashed into soup.
And look at me. Thing. Do I look like I eat vegetables? My mom was telling me today that I should, like, exercise a little more. And I was like,
I have an exercise bike you can use.
I was like, what are you trying to say, mom? She goes, nothing. Just that you need to exercise.
Dude. I do need to exercise more.
The nerve.
Yeah. But look at my hands, though. Like, look at how red this one is because of the beets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't mind beets if it's like a beet salad. I don't mind beets like that. Although I can't remember the last time I had beets. I don't eat vegetables very often. I eat like kale, a lot of kale. Mm-hmm. But that's it.
Tons of kale, yeah. I did a kale soup.
Ew, you're gross.
Kale, chicken, and yuca was amazing, dude.
Ew. Oh, I'm traumatized now. Oh my god, I'm so excited, guys. 1.5 weeks until I go on vacation. Mm-hmm. Yay, fuck Azul Airlines. anyway, yes. What was I gonna say?
I don't know.
I just ate, but I'm hungry. So I think I'm gonna have, like, a salad. Ugh. Depressed. Yes. Very depressed.
Do you want to choose a city to do the shout-outs?
I actually had one. Hold on. I read a really cool one here. Where is it? Well, first of all, people from Minas Gerais, I'm so offended that you're not listening to this. There's only one. There's only one town from Minas Gerais, Contagem. It's not even my hometown. I'm so offended right now. But I wanted to shout out. Hold on.
I'm going to do the names first and then you say the city.
Okay.
All right. So today we're shouting out Dani, Nicole, Mariel, and Adriana, who interacted with us this week. So that's cool. I think it was Danny. Yeah. Pretty sure it was Danny. She like commented something on our Facebook picture. So that was really nice. We really like when you guys comment things on our Facebook. So do that more, okay? And so those people and the listeners on or at in whatever.
Oh, listeners, and I'm sorry. I thought you were gonna say something.
You got distracted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the listeners from Parnamirim. I just thought that was such a great name. So hello, Parnamirim. That's really cool. In Rio Grande do Norte, Brazil.
Ah,
Parnamirim. Yeah. Hello, Parnamirim. Guys.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool fun. Like, it's really cool to see, like, where our podcast, like, reaches, you know?
Yes.
Because it's, like, I mean, we knew we were going to have Brazilian listeners, like, whatever. But, like, we thought it was going to be, like, you know, the capitals, like, the main cities, you know? But it's really cool to see that people listen to podcasts everywhere, dude. That's amazing.
Exactly. Like, there's places in Brazil where we have listeners that I honestly had never heard of.
But not just Brazil, though. Like, all over.
Well, yeah, all over the world. But, like, I feel like with Brazil is more impactful for me because I'm like, I feel like I have the duty to know every place in Brazil because I'm Brazilian. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, actually, no. I actually do not know. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So, guys, again, I want to remind you that we are on track for our 50th episode soon.
Yes. Mm.
Can you believe 50 episodes?
50 episodes of us just, like, yapping on forever and ever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still
here. And what's crazy is that it just keeps getting better after 50, right?
I guess.
No, we're if you listen to us when we started and now, like, it's a lot better. But anyways, 50 is going to be exciting, so you guys definitely look out for that.
I feel like we don't put
like the numbers. Huh?
I feel like we should have a party. We didn't even have a party for our anniversary, but let's have a party for the 50th episode. What the?
You all right? The microphone fell?
I have no idea what fell, but like something fell on my foot. I'm telling you, my house is haunted. When I tell you my house is haunted. Oh, God.
Oh, my. So, yeah, I guess that's it, you guys.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hope you guys have a good end of the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, goodbye. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Suspiria, a true crime podcast. If you are a creep and enjoy listening to all of the horrible information, please check out our previous episodes and write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
And also follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram as Suspiria Podcast. Facebook is also Suspiria Podcast. If you want to follow Carol, you can follow her at Suspiria Carol. And you can follow me at EU.Steph. Note, none of us post anything interesting.
We do, actually.
If you have any case suggestions, feel free to drop them over at SuspiriaPodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to be part of this podcast, you can also email us. We promise we won't bite. Ciao! Ciao.